Good evening. Welcome to my domain.
I haven't gotten to do the voice, guys, in over a month.
Yeah.
And it's I have it swelling up inside.
It's all pent up.
It's all pent up. I got it, bud.
You're having a Drac attack.
Dracula flow.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Adventure Zone Zone, everyone's favorite podcast about the podcast done by the guys in the podcast. This episode, we're recapping our adventures in Ongrave with Taz versus Dracula. Hey, I'll start. I had a good fucking time doing this.
Yeah, this
one
was like a game to play.
This one was like a game, like a fun game, and you, yeah. I would agree with you. This is our most game-like season.
It was nice to finally have fun with you guys.
You're making it sound like we don't have fun doing other seasons of the show.
No, I'm interested. Let's get. Are we going to introduce ourselves?
I'm Justin McCroy. I did.
It would be so wild to listen to the commentary episode.
Okay, yeah, I want to have a. I know we usually do Q&A, but before we get into that, I want to have a navel gazy.
Yeah, sure.
No holds barred, free flowing conversation about why
a debrief.
A debrief. Some seasons are really easy. And some of them take a lot more work to some of them take a while to find their footing. Why do you guys think versus Dracula? What are the reasons that it worked as well as it did?
Gosh, I hope everyone out there liked. I'm
it's
so
in,
unplugged
it's in
from.
I'm saying like within the context of the stuff we made
of the four. Of
why
us.
Did we have? Oh, yeah, let's just call it fun then. Why was this one so much fun? I have theories, but I want to get your thoughts.
One of the things that I really think worked very well is from the get, like, you can't deny a clear objective. It's right there in the title,
sure.
Right? I'm just like, yeah, we got to stop Dracula.
Yeah. I think that I think 10 reasons off the top of my head of, like, things that I tried to do purposefully differently from how I did it in, like, Amnesty or Ethersea, which is way less prep and predefined. Like courses of action. I had like ideas and events that you could sort of swing on a vine to if you needed them, but like way, way, way less prep on my end, which just means naturally kind of like more improvisation on your guys' end. I also think like, and this is very purposeful. Again, we talked about this a lot when we were trying to decide what the next season should be, like wanting to do one with a concept that is kind of funny. Like I think that for everything we've done, except maybe Taz Balance, which maybe there's a lesson there. Like the ideas have been more kind of like fleshed out. And, you know, with Ethersea, we had all the world building that we did and had like all of this big rich world that was fun to play around in. But having a guiding light of like everything can just be like dead ass stupid was very liberating for me. And frankly, I think plays to our strengths a lot better than... you know, starting out a season with like a whole bunch of lore and stuff that we want to, you know, bounce off.
Dad, what about you?
I like the fact that after whatever, 9 years, 8 years, however many years, we were able to kind of get back to thinking outside the box when it came to solving problems and doing stuff. But that's tempered with our experience that you don't want to go too far outside the box.
Yeah.
We just stayed within a slightly bigger box than the slightly smaller box.
Sure.
Yeah, the possibility space was larger.
And I think I think it challenges your creativity instead of just saying the wildest crap you can think of in an attempt to derail. I think we tried to think teamwork and try to think what would be really not only kind of cool but it would be fun. I think getting back to entertaining ourselves, I mean, to a large degree, I think we've never not entertained ourselves, but I think the fact that we got back to let's the four of us have a blast, and if everybody else likes it, that's great. And I enjoyed that quite a bit. And I think the fact that we went in without too much character delineation, that we were able to, you know, free things up or completely change character if need be.
Mm. Well, yeah, that wasn't a conscious choice on your part, at least not.
No, I don't know.
No, it was
not
a conscious choice.
We'll get to that question.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I can't wait to debrief all the fucking completely unpredictable, wild moments that made me throw away large portions of my prep work. Travis, did you answer the question?
Well, yeah, no, I said the clear thing, but I also think to Griffin's point, I think we do well in like the juxtaposition of like us as players and our characters juxtaposed to like the world. And so like a world in which, you know, on paper, it's like there's a scary monster king who has been like stolen the sun and it, like the undead walk the earth. And it's like, yeah, okay, cool. But that didn't inform like the way that we interacted with people. A lot of the stuff
that actually happened. Yeah.
And so right. I think it creates a lot of really good and fertile ground for having fun to be able to react to those things and have expectations subverted and stuff like that. I also
want to say here at the top, there may be a question about this later, but much like Balance, I springboarded this season off of The Curse of Strahd, which is one of the you know, book campaigns
Here's a question from Keith, Griffin. Let me set it up for you, okay?
Okay,
I've enjoyed
please.
The many different styles and narrative directions you've experimented with over the years. This season felt like a return to goofier, more reverent style, similar to the tone of Balance. Was this a conscious choice or something that happened organically? Do you have conversations about tone and style before you start recording a new season?
I mean, yes. I mean, I think we've said as much in our sort of talking about this, but like we definitely we wanted to take some of the pressure off of ourselves to like set up huge lore, huge narrative before like starting the game. I think that's the main difference. And then whenever an opportunity comes to then like build off of whatever and improvise whatever, like we can still follow that principle. I think it's like, honestly, it is one of our great challenges on this show is like trusting ourselves to come up with stuff on the fly that can like eventually turn into, you know, character beats and stuff like that. And I think it is when this show works the best. So I think that was the first conversation is like, how do we kind of focus on that? And I think that talking about a setting that is so kind of silly really makes that a possibility. I was also looking at Curse of Strahd at the time and was that those two pieces kind of connected. Like it would be funny to do a season that was just about trying to kill Dracula, but instead of him being this scary dark warlock, he was, I don't know, cartoon Dracula.
I will say it also never, I feel like there was one rule with this show, and like if there's an exception to this, I don't know what it is, but there were more tender moments, but nothing I think was played with 100% sincerity. Like we didn't get to a place where characters were having deeper, earnest conversations about their feelings.
Yes.
It didn't get deep. It didn't get earnest. Yeah. And that is one rule, as wild as all the things were. And that is something where, like, is tough sometimes when like, because the kinds of stories you want to tell, sometimes there's that compulsion, like, oh, let's dig deep into this. This is interesting. I wonder what's going on. And, like, we never consciously decided this, but, like, we all sort of, I think, subconsciously agreed, like, we're not going to get deep with these characters. We're not going to get into their inner workings. We're going to understand them at a primary and perhaps secondary level, but we're not going to get super deep.
I want to give special kudos to Travis for this with Mutt, because I think we all feel this compulsion of, like, how can I make this a bigger, more emotionally resonant thing? Like, is this an opportunity to kind of, like, include a little bit of that spice in here? And at the end, your resolution with the Invisible Man, I thought, was truly, truly inspired.
Yeah,
truly,
it really was.
A genius, very like true to character. I feel like you learn more about Mutt from that choice than any conversation they could have had about, like, you know, maybe we both do carry a lot of generational trauma. Like, instead of that, Mutt saying, like, no, like, tells me a lot more about Mutt and his, like, avoidance. And there doesn't have to be, like, I don't know, we don't have to fix Mutt by the end of this thing, but I do certainly feel like I learned a lot about Mutt in that moment.
He's one of your best characters, Trav.
Seriously. Yeah. I had a lot of fun. I told Griffin afterwards, there was a, I can't remember exactly when the conversation happened or how, like how it came up, but something about like Mutt being hired as a guide and like babysitter for Lady Godwin and for Philo, and then treating it like that of basically being a little bit like, yeah, man, I'm part of the team, but I'm also like on the clock trying to keep them from dying and trying to like keep things like I'm here to make sure you guys don't eat poisonous thing, like things you find while you're out foraging.
It's harder to do. It's harder in some ways to do a character that is like disciplined is probably the word, right? Like I think Duck is a good example of this with regards to like his forestry work, right? It's harder in some ways to be a professional because it assumes a level of like experience and credibility that can be hard to role play, right? There's a reason a lot of role playing characters are like vagabonds or jack of all trades because it's like, because I don't really know how to do horse stuff. So I can't be like a horse expert.
They can't get fired for doing wild shit.
But it is, there's a fun stability, I think, to having a character that is that settled to where they know themselves and they know what their job is. And I think that it actually, the structure is helpful because I think it lets other people play off of that.
Yeah. I will also say a combination of the strength of like Ranger, like as a Ranger inherently is like, hey, here's a thing they're good at. Like this wedge of space is what they're good at. But also, man, I got some really good roles when it came to like sneaking through the forest or finding tracks and stuff like that. That was like, oh, okay, good. My character isn't pretending to be good at this stuff, which is the other side of it.
I wasn't planning on the Invisible Man being a like character in this season, but anytime you would do like a really, really good role, I always thought it was the funniest solution to be like, and then you find the Invisible Man's footprints.
Yeah.
And it's like, shit, I'm writing a check for the Invisible Man that I do not know how to cash.
Trav, is it, I just real quick, because this is for my own edification. The name is an obvious clue, but is it safe to say that maybe a little bit of Crawford's personality you kind of took from your grandfather?
Oh, Crawford. 100%.
It seemed like a lot of his personality was in there.
Yeah, our mom's dad, Crawford Kitchen. I just like the name Crawford and Crawford Kitchen.
Incredible.
What
Crawford
a great
Kitchen
name.
Is killer.
Yeah. But I mean, it's also in the last name too, because like it was basically that mixed with like a kind of bloodhound personality, like an older hound dog kind of deal, where it's just like, yeah, man, I don't know, I'm just happy to be here, kind of feeling of like getting excited about things. But like our grandfather Crawford would also occasionally just like mutter jokes to us while like mom and his wife Diane were like our step grandma would like be having conversations. And I remember one time they were having this conversation and Diane was like completely monopolizing mom's time. And Papa just like muttering to me like, yeah, man, she's just my daughter and I'd love to get to talk to her, but I never get to see her. Oh, Diane. And like that, it cracked me up so much. And like
incredible kind of mustache on that.
Oh my God.
I think my head cannon for Mutt is Papa Crawford.
And
like
the man
mustache
who taught me all about metal detection. Very much.
Cool.
Very much.
Yeah, it's a very good tribute, Trev.
I am going to start imposing a one answer per question rule, because we've done exactly one and we're well into this. So let's start. Let's pick up the pace.
And no more than 1 minute per answer, everyone.
Oh my God.
Whoa, holy
shit. Starting
to
feel like a speech or debate competition, Justin.
Yeah, well, get a little discipline.
I got one here for Dad from, I think, Fee. When it comes to D&D classes, I'm a huge fan of mixing about flavor text and game mechanics. Philo is a great example of this, being an artificer, alchemist, and a man of the cloth, as opposed to a class like Cleric or Paladin. What inspired this class choice, and did it inspire any of the rest of y'all to consider other potential background/class pairings?
I really was excited about playing an artificer. I goofed around with it a little bit on a couple other projects, but something about really trying to play within those confines, I seem kind of drawn to builder characters, engineer type characters, and the fact that he was a magic user and could use magic, but at the same time had to incorporate that into some kind of physical context, the tools you use, the things
that's
you
that's the coolest shit about that's the main reason to play Artificer. I feel like it's not just the stuff they can do, is like it's because each of their spells is like a little bomb or whatever.
I also feel like though that Philo is one of the best I think that you've ever done on Taz in terms of, or that any of us have done in terms of like the character really working in concert with what the class is. Like everything that you would do that was part of your like toolkit, a lot of times in Taz, the comedy is like, this is such a weird thing that I'm able to do, right? It's that juxtaposition. But I think with Philo, it was really interesting because everything you did felt very plausible within who this character was, right? There was a really good like continuity between this is who I understand this person to be and these are the like the mechanical skills that are available to them.
Yeah.
They really work nicely together.
In my head canon, when Philo does something with magic and technology, he is an absolute expert in his field, one of the greatest of our generation. And then when he's having to make choices out in the world, something misfires in his brain. And he's like, I put the hat on and press the button. Like there's something, he knows what he knows, which is potions and technology. What he doesn't know is how to stay alive, making basic sort of human judgments in the face of danger and traps.
Well, I think that also holds with, and I made a conscious effort to do that because he basically was a monk, a friar who had lived in a monastery and had, you know, done his community work. And that was, you know, he hadn't been out in the world very much. And, you know, and I think that that's a good analogy. I can also deal with another question or two that were on here about, well, you asked me about why he put the helmet on.
Yeah, we have literally, I'm looking at the list of questions. There's three of them about putting the helmet on, how you felt about not having a human body, and like what twists and unexpected things happened this season. And this was, I think, the one that started it all. Basically, to go behind the curtain real quick, that was supposed to introduce to you Van Helsing in the body of Pinocchio, which Dracula had trapped him in. And I was like leaving clues like there's a skeleton. If you look around, maybe you'll find some of Van Helsing's stuff. And Dad was like, zoop, beep, boop, Pinocchio. And I don't know if you could pick up on the panic in my voice where I was like, okay, is this like a fucking, are they roommates in there? What's going on?
What I thought was it would give control over those disembodied hands.
Now, here's the thing, Dad. I love knowing what you thought was going to happen. Because from the fact that there was a skeleton strapped in there,
a dead body,
and this hands were still moving around.
This is the helmet that lets you control the hands, but at what terrible cost?
Yeah, Dad. If you were walking around and you saw a dead skeleton, former human, dead body holding a hamburger in their hands, would your thought not be like, I bet that hamburger's what killed,
But who knows?
Or would you think, like, I bet that hamburger gives me the power to fly?
Hamburger's been the danger zone. Couldn't be more
I thought maybe he had died happy with that helmet on and that, you know.
Maybe like, he wanted to die
centuries ago. And, no, that really is what I thought.
He died of dehydration because he never wanted to stop controlling the hands with the hat.
Yeah.
But once I got to tell you, I was completely shocked with the Pinocchio thing. I did not see it coming.
No kidding.
But I almost immediately embraced it because it was such a funny concept, and it kind of gave me an out in the fact that, you know, suddenly this character, it would be so funny to see this guy, and I wouldn't be necessarily tied to the whole cleric religious character, which Brother Philo was. And I was a little hesitant about playing Brother Philo. And I got to throw this in. My inspiration for him was a fictional character named Brother Cadfile, who was a monk who solved mysteries, a great book series. And that was kind of what that was. But I didn't want to play necessarily another, you know, religious character,
straight up man, another cleric. Yeah, sure.
Yeah,
and the fact that then Pinocchio could then become not a tank, but
the Pope,
a fighter.
The way it went though, and the way he accepted it so quickly, I think those two. That's a really good example of like where randomness and choice kind of like make a new reality when you're doing a role-playing story. Because like that vibe of I put the hat on and I'm fine with what happened, it gave Philo this vibe of like, I don't know, he doesn't make a lot of good choices, but things seem to basically work out for him okay.
Yeah.
Like it reminds me, I was rewatching Deadpool 2, and it reminds me a little bit of Domino. You know what I mean? Like the bus crashing around Philo because he's crossing the street in an inopportune moment.
He has good luck powers.
Right.
Yeah.
I also feel like there is a meta story happening about Philo, where he is a man who is somewhat detached from reality. And I think that that's maybe a facet of his origin. But the quickness with which you were like, yeah, no, I'm a puppet now and I love being a puppet. And then there was a scene when you met On where you found out that the Turbo Cardinal had turned into a vampire and killed everyone in your whole order. And Van Helsing was trying to check in with you after, like, hey, man, are you doing okay? And your response was like, yeah, you know, I'm getting really used to being a puppet. And Van Helsing was like, okay. I tried to play that moment like Van Helsing is worried about you a little bit. Yeah. And so I tried to slide in little warnings to you throughout as Van Helsing, like, hey, man, just don't lose sight of the stuff that... And you're like, yeah. Anyway, I'm going to turn myself into the Pope Internet. Like, there's a... Like, it's a character who I think is genuinely very interesting because it's like, I don't think Philo is completely in touch with...
Nope. And it sounds apocryphal, but I think going into the puppet body, I decided, well, I think you would lose some humanity. Not all of it. Still a good
dude. Anyway, we broke our one answer per question.
Immediately. I broke it.
Yeah.
But I answered four questions.
Yes, that we did. I will say also on the subject of other big twists, when you guys killed On, didn't think that was going to... My thought was like, this could go one of a few ways. You take the sword out and you're like, yeah, I'll keep the sword. And then On comes back. And then you have to, maybe you have to fight a god. What? But then you just like did it.
Yeah, we just
and
killed him. Killed the god.
And you took Excalibur.
You didn't think we were going to, you had to know we were going to take the sword.
This is the second time I've been sort of, my hubris has been my undoing.
Got it. You can't put it in front of us, not to expect us to steal
absolutely.
It.
Hey, a couple of quick announcements, too, before we get back to the episode. We've got a bunch of cool stuff over at macromerch.com. If you haven't checked it out, you need to go do that. 10% of all merch proceeds this month will be donated to Border Angels. Macromerch.com, check that out. Also, Griffin's book, The Stowaway, is out now. It's a choose-your-own-adventure. Go to bit.ly/GriffinStowaway and get all the information there or find it at a local bookstore.
Thank you, Travis.
You're welcome, Griffin. And Justin's great, too. He does cool things.
Whatever.
All right. Back to the show.
My name is Jordan Cruciola, and I love movies. But you know what I might love even more? Talking about movies. And the directors, actors, and writers that join me every week on Feeling Seen love to talk about movies, too. Like our recent co-host, the writer and director, Justin Simeon.
And I love the premise of your show, Feeling Seen. I think that's kind of always my goal when I'm making something. Nothing touches my heart more than when someone comes out of my movie and says, oh my God, I never thought I would see myself.
So hang out with us and geek out about watching movies, making movies, and the ways the movies we love speak to us directly. You might just start asking folks around you, hey, what movie character made you feel seen? We're doing it every week at MaximumFun.org.
The Greatest Generation has been going for more than 8 years.
And if you've been Greatest Gen curious, but have never taken the leap, we recommend exploring your Greatest Gen curiosity in a safe, fun environment with partners you can trust. And right now is one of the best times ever to become a new listener.
That's because we just started covering a new series, Star Trek Enterprise. One of the horniest and weirdest editions of Star Trek ever released.
This is your chance to ease into the Greatest Generation lifestyle.
The Greatest Generation, now covering Star Trek Enterprise, the one with Scott Bakula, every Monday on MaximumFun.org or in your podcast app.
Okay, another question.
I got one for you. May I read one? Raps asks, how many pages of Dracula's diary did you have prepared for the episode's intro? Were you picking which one to use depending on what the party's goal was, or did you have specific information you needed to give out for that episode and then improve the page's contents on the day? Thank you for all you do.
Yeah, improv the pages. I did improve the pages constantly. no, I mean, I would love a world in which I could write an entire diary for Dracula and then as we play an episode be like, I bet this will be germane today. But I did write all of those as part of sort of my loose prep for each episode and sort of think about. I don't really love the previously on thing, like as a rule on any show. And so having it be a kind of, I don't know, diegetic part of the show, I thought was a good solve for
Thank
that.
You. I just did the last season, so I thought you were talking about me. I'm so sorry. Go ahead.
I got one from Steve. How fun was it performing these characters in live shows? Now that the campaign is over, will you continue to use the Versus Dracula characters in live shows?
It's a blast. I mean, I think that Mutt is one of my favorite characters to perform live. A little bit because his costume is basically just clothes, which is nice.
Huge upgrade, yeah.
Huge. But it also is just like, man, it's really fun to play these characters that we've spent a lot of time with and are very comfortable playing, but without a lot of burden of like rich inner life so much of like, there's very little of like, well, they wouldn't do that. Oh, and they've already interacted with this person. And like, oh, we've had this big character development, so they wouldn't make that comment anymore. It's very much just like playing a cartoon character of getting to be like, yeah, man, I just get to step in and do it and react to the thing the way that they would react to it and have fun with it.
Yeah. I will also say as DM for it, having just a huge slate of public domain works to try and like choose from is like just enough of a boundary on prep work and idea stuff that it has been very helpful to just look at it and be like, oh fuck, I don't know, we could do Great Gatsby.
I have one I want to ask.
Yeah,
loved this season, says Abby. Were there any plans that had to be changed or reworked due to unexpected character deaths or crazy roles, i.e. was the Wolfman on or Frankenstein going to a bigger role that got cut short? You touched on a couple of these. What was the original plan for Van Helsing's role before Brother Philo pushed that button?
Yeah, I did some of it. Killing On, I did not expect and was wild, although I was happy to kind of like, I don't know, tie back into that at the end with Mutt's sort of scene. Frankenstein, I don't know. I had Frankenstein pretty fleshed out and was then just kind of like going to use him as I was going to use him, but I don't like forcing, I don't know, character interactions down your guys' throats. And so you kind of just hung out with him for a little bit, cut his arm off. I had a beat where I was considering bringing him back in at the end, but again, like...
It wasn't very memorable the first time, I guess. So I'm not sure it would have hit, you know?
Yes. I think Wolfman getting killed was a huge surprise. Did not expect that.
I feel
that.
Like I tried to give the Wolfman plenty of opportunities.
Yeah. No, yeah, no, but that was, I don't know, we haven't played like that in a while, where a character just vengefully slays another character.
This is actually...
It's great, it's fucking amazing and a great character moment, but yeah.
I didn't get to touch on that, but I think that one of the things that was really helpful is clear good versus evil, like clear sides, and... We dramatically, that's not always the most interesting, but if you're not trying to do a drama, it's pretty helpful to know that, like, that's a bad guy. And even if it's not a bad guy, there's something about the iconographic power of some of these characters where, like, even if you kill them, you know you're not really killing them, right? Like, even in the fiction of the worlds we've made, like, you're not going to kill Dracula. I mean, you can't, you know, you're not going to kill any of these guys. They could come back any time. It's magical. And I think that,
I mean, I have a great idea to that effect that I had ready this season, but did not end up deploying.
I do want to highlight, I think the warehouse kind of chapter of it was maybe some of the most fun I had.
I think it's my favorite. Yeah.
The like series of like, it was a great kind of like throw off joke when we talked about everybody having to intricately go back and rebite, like the of like trying to like track, like, okay, then you bit me.
Yeah, we were making up entire world rules in real time, which is fucking so fun. And then having to like say, like, wait a minute, if that's how wolfmanism works, then that's got to be crazy for everybody who's a wolf person. It's got to be just a constant. You would have to, your Google calendar would be like, bite Ricky, bite Dave, get bitten by Ricky.
Like, there was a moment, I may have misread it, but like, it was one of those moments where as we were doing it, there's that sense of like, maybe we should just stay here. Like, maybe we should forget about Dracula, just live in this situation for a few weeks.
The payoff with the goldfish made me incredibly happy.
Yeah. Where he became a revolutionary against the Wolfman forces. I feel like to get back to Godwin killing Wolfman, I feel like Godwin was great for me this season to keep the stakes in mind. I feel like you had the best sort of motivation to keep going and really like were great at pulling stuff along. But like we would get in situations where and the warehouse was a great example of this, where these are monsters. Like, these are monsters who kill and eat human beings. Like, they are, and they're fun. They're fun guys to party with. But, like, I think also there's this other side of every monster in this story where it's like they're really likable. They also murder people.
Yeah.
They murder people. And a lot of them eat the people. And so Godwin was great at being like, don't forget, they also murder and kill. Like, these are dangerous creatures and they are sympathetic and fun to hang out with, but like they are killers. And I felt like that was genuinely helpful also for me as DM to be like, you're right, these are dangerous monsters, you would want to slay them.
Speaking of Godwin, we have a question from Pseudonym, and this is one I've wanted to know about. I've always wondered about the body that Lady Godwin's head was grafted onto. I know she was a gladiator of some kind who won every battle until her last one, but was there ever a fuller backstory there? Have you ever considered introducing the body's previous owner as another character?
Okay.
And why is the axe named Jennifer Myers?
So I was puzzled by this, but they haven't heard the last episode of the season, right?
Oh,
at this point.
Oh, right.
So they wouldn't have heard.
At the end,
there's an incredible teaser about
the
revert, the anti-Godwin.
which is an idea
that came to me like as that morning. Like, oh, shit.
It really was an incredible moment of collaborative storytelling where Justin was like, shut the fuck up.
I wrote
this thing, and it's the introduction of the anti-Godwin. And this is my end. I appreciate that.
It's not collaborative story. So you're being sarcastic a little bit.
Especially after it came after a pretty lengthy, and what's Mutt up to? Rather than like, okay, cool. And now he has 30 seconds of introducing this script that Justin wrote. Read it.
It's just,
it also,
it's a great gag, and I couldn't do it with any help. History needed it, and I couldn't risk anybody else getting their fingerprints on it.
If you could attempt to remedy one sort of small plot hole for me in this moment, live in person, when you all sieged the city of Lumino and crashed the car, Dragula, you did see all of your bones go flying out of the trunk of the automobile.
Yeah.
Did those bones then sort of remuscle?
So you saw the bones?
I think you saw the bones.
So you just saw the
bones.
So, Griffin, what you're saying is, you never saw me die. Interesting.
Okay, so the suggestion here is that the anti-Godwin that shows up at the end has no bones.
Or different bones.
They're not my bones. No, man, it's not my bones.
That's not my beautiful bones.
What's Jennifer Myers? What is Jennifer Myers connected?
Yeah, what the fuck is that?
Yeah.
Was it just the first name that came to your mind?
Jennifer Myers. I thought it was really funny to... I always think it's funny when there are like hard names for weapons, right? Like Oathbringer or whatever, right? So
sure.
If the sword is just named... I like the idea. I have had a lot of named weapons. And I've continued that proud tradition in our next arc. Of another named axe, but I just really like the idea of a mundane name for a weapon because she had no real connection to it. So it was just like, I feel like someone said pick a name for it, and she just picked the first name that came to mind.
I love that.
I'll tell you what threw me is the first time I heard it, for some reason my brain connected to Stephanie Myers, who I think wrote the Twilight books.
Yes,
and at first I was like, is it named after an author? And my brain just like chewed on that for like 4 or 5 episodes and wouldn't let go of it.
Here's the actual, like, I have gotten more comfortable, and I think it is a kind of thing that is just specific to this kind of thing that we do. I think that it's okay to throw out stuff that doesn't land initially, and that can feel kind of uncomfortable, but I've gotten pretty comfortable with just opening my mouth and seeing what comes out and then finding it later, right? Because if I throw out a completely, and this is something we've tried to do with other characters, I think, and it doesn't work. If I try to have pages upon pages of mythos figured out for myself, that's not very interesting to figure out. But if I have like questions for myself, like why is the axe named Jennifer Myers? I thought I'd have a satisfying answer to that by the end of the season. Didn't work out that way. It happened. You know, not all the...
I did consider the axe at one point becoming sentient and being like,
We've done that though, yeah, man.
Sentient. Well, guys, we've been doing this for 10 fucking years. We've done everything at this point.
Except not murdering. like other than that, like they have to have axes. Sure. So like, you not want them to talk? Like...
All right, what else do we want to get up
on? Trav, you got one you want to ask?
Daran asks, the season of Taz has been my favorite since Balance. I'm dying to know, what song was stuck in Dracula's head?
Oh.
I assume it was 311's Amber's the Color of Her Energy.
So that was sort of, I was trying to think of like a resolution for Dracula. And this was me like leaning into my baser instincts of like, what if the villain did have like a secret motivation for the things that he did beyond like biting everyone in town. And I am very interested in the concept of like when an immortal being eventually loses their mind, because like, if you're alive for too long, I can't imagine that continues to be a pleasant experience mentally. And so the idea of like Dracula being driven to do all of this wild shit because he had a song stuck in his head for several centuries, and how to resolve that. So the song that was stuck in his head, I tried to set up as at least having the note C-A-B-B-A-G-E in it. But it's not, that wasn't a reference to, it was not like if you punch those into some sheet music, you're going to play, you know, Five for Fighting Superman or something.
So there wasn't a specific song that you had in mind?
No, I wasn't like sourcing some, I wasn't doing a needle drop. And I could have done it with some sort of public domain music. That maybe I'll explore that for next season.
Travis, I have a question here from Colive. I didn't expect Crawford's change of heart about killing the Invisible Man, but I really liked how it played out. Did Crawford's decision surprise you in the moment? Have the other players ever been surprised by their own character choices?
So I just wanted to, because I know we talked about it, but I did want to, when that was happening, I felt my own impulse to be like, time for a big dramatic scene and resolution to this thing. And it was just like, yeah, that's not only is that not fit the moment of the thing, it just wasn't what that would be. And I started thinking about like very much, you know, the kind of like rugged Appalachian man I was kind of basing Mutt off of, and that idea of like, I'm gonna have a big emotional moment, and just didn't resonate there. And I just like the idea of him being like, yeah, I get it, I see the problem, we don't need to figure that out.
I see what you're trying to do. That was very much a conversation between Travis and Griffin, in addition to a conversation between Invisible Man and Mutt, of me saying like, are you sure that you don't want to make more of a meal of this? Are you sure, man?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm glad it went the way that it did, though.
But it's like if a friend started saying like, hey, man, I just want to talk to you about this problem, you know, and you instantly understand the problem that they're addressing, and you're like, oh, yeah, I get it. You're absolutely right. I will work on that. But they've been preparing like a full explanation of it, and I'm like, no, I get it. Yeah, you're right. I do need to work on that.
I,
Here's one that I think is interesting. In past T-Tazes, you've talked about the balance between really fleshing out the PCs before a campaign versus keeping it vague and discovering them as you play. How do you guys feel about the characters in Taz versus Dracula in terms of pre-planning and discovery?
Yeah, Juicy, I mean, you touched on this with Godwin, right? Like leaving questions open.
Yeah, here is one thing that I didn't, that is interesting about Godwin, I thought at least. And this is terms of like pre-planning and discovery or whatever. I came up with the idea of, I wanted to do some sort of barbarian, but I wanted to like really play against the type of the character. So and I really like playing high status characters. High society woman who has a barbarian's body was like a really, I think that was a fun idea.
Who's your most high status? Augustus Parsons?
I mean, if you think about like Taco's high status, Augustus is high status.
Yeah, that's a fair point.
You know, I like playing that kind of character. I think it's fun. So I came up with the idea, and as I started playing it, and this is something that like didn't occur until we started being in the show, the drama of her story was a really close parallel unintentionally to people who are in bodies that they don't love and that they aren't comfortable in. And sure. I realized as I was doing it, like, well, I don't want to try to tell other people's story, even though I didn't, especially not one that I like didn't set out to tell. Right. So yeah. I had to make the decision at that moment that like, she is going to be someone who this body that she is in, it's about someone who is loving the body that they're in and learning to love the body that they're in. And that was not a story that I had to like, that I set out to tell, but it was one that I had to kind of become aware of as we were doing it, right? Because otherwise, and we have definitely done this before, just through improvising and then sort of like finding the things that feel organic because you have lived them so many times and heard the story so many times, like you end up unintentionally paralleling stuff that you didn't necessarily
of course
plan to tell.
Yeah. I think you did a good job with that. I'm not the right person to make that call, I'm sure.
I don't know about that, Griffin. Who better?
As far as Mike goes, there was very little pre-play. Like, I think of any character I've ever played in Adventure Zone or anything else, it was the one that I most said, like,
I wonder if I can find the email pitches from these
guys. Yeah, that I was like, I know I want him to be like an Appalachian, like mountain man monster hunter. And I think Griffin had asked, like, what the motivation is for, like, why he wants to kill Dracula. And I think I was like, yeah, like a family of monster hunters. And, like, they've, but then, like, the stuff with, like, the Invisible Man and go get his teeth to make, like, that was all like, okay, cool, man. And what I really actually loved about that and continue to be a thing throughout is that there was no passion in Mutt's desire to kill. I think it was like he wants to retire from monster hunting, but doesn't want to do it with like the Muttner family name being like associated with failure. So wants to kill Dracula so that he can comfortably retire. And like,
yeah.
So there was no passion in it. There was no like, I am a monster slayer or good versus evil. It's just a job, you know, it's just like, oh, I do it because that's what the Muttner family does. And getting to play it as like, not like full of vitriol and emotion, but just like, yeah, man, it's what I've always done. It's what I know, man.
I think for Philo, first of all, I think the big prep for me was learning the new class, learning the artificer. And I think that kind of informed a lot of Philo/Pinocchio's personality after that, because he had to be a scavenger. And I think that became kind of a keynote of his personality that, you know, he'd pick up this junk and, you know, saved his own body and used magic to shrink things down into components. And that whole junk dealer, MacGyver kind of angle, I think, was kind of informative for he's a cross between MacGyver and Fred Sanford.
I can see that.
I loved the sense of experimentation that Philo approached everything with. I also want to highlight when Philo turned into a fish to swim into the heart
and swim up the bloodstream. And that was one of my favorite moments as Mutt, is that I was like, I'm going to sneak over there. You guys wait here, and I'll signal you when the coast is clear. Yeah. And then you guys both instantly did other things.
Just beefed it.
And in character being like, okay. And then Mutt turns back, and neither one of them are there.
It's no fun to just hide.
I know.
To have
it was
thing
perfect.
Be hiding. I did want to just real quick, I found Justin's Slack message to me, December 14th, 2023. You think a barbarian would be okay? Fighter just looks really boring. Me, sure. Justin. Okay, here's the pitch. She has body parts from several different fighters, but her head doesn't know about fighting. So rage for her is like letting muscle memory take over. Oh, 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 fuck. Her head is like Maggie Smith. That's the end of communication between me and Justin on his character.
Oh, that's how and that's literally, how the magic happens, folks. That's how creation process. Oh, fuck.
Her head is like Maggie Smith. Kick ass, dude. This one's for me, but I think we can all talk about it because it's a question that shows up in a lot of these. Zip and a lot of others say, this question's for Griffin. I was curious to know if there was a public domain character you really wanted to use, but for some reason they got put on the cutting room floor. Also, for everyone else, was there a character you really wanted to see in the adventure once you knew Griffin was going for public domain characters?
Is this your trailer for upcoming live shows?
No, I don't have any live show ideas. I have some if we wanted to return to Taz versus something else for like another short season, some ideas, but I don't think I'm like, I don't know, sitting on big ones. But man, if you look at the list of public domain characters, it's fucking crazy how much stuff
Thank
is
you,
on
humanity.
Yeah, thanks, humanity. Thanks for being around
such a wild
so
thing to say, man. If you look at all the characters ever created in human history, other than the last 75 years, we've really done some amazing stuff over the millennia.
No, I'm saying as
Homer.
Ooh,
fuck it! Have you guys seen Odysseus? This wild man, he's going to all the different islands. We could do that for free, like no problem.
This is what
we don't have to pay Homer's estate a single dollar.
I mentioned this earlier, right? I think that there are a lot of ways of looking at what the choices that largely I have made this season.
Just real quick, I love this. Griffin, just I want to say Taz versus Commedia dell'arte before I forget about it.
Yeah, put that out there.
Taz versus Dante's Inferno. Okay, go on, Griffin. If you
hear about the Dark Pictures anthology and you think that is a crass marketing effort. To take these
is Guernica in the public domain yet? Can we do Taz versus Guernica?
To take these great works and put them into the grinder to fill with a Tom Cruise sausage. You see that and you say gross. As an artist, capital A artist and writer, looking at the list of public domain works is like challenges that are fun and exciting, I feel like. How can we do a Wolfman? How can we do a Pinocchio and have it make sense in this world? That's so much easier than just coming up with a whole new fucking idea.
Well,
that could be
Kidding
anything.
Aside, though, I know we kind of backed it.
Not kidding. That's
100% we backed into it with a joke, sort of. But like, it is. I think another strength of this season is that so much of the like chunky shoe leather of world building is sort of pre-built, right? It's Dracula.
Yeah.
Moving on. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, right.
There's a shared vocabulary.
And then anything we do and any choices we make with those characters is the informative stuff. Like, okay, it's like Dracula, but he loves to party with Wolfman. I know that about, it's fucking great. It's genuinely super duper, especially for live shows. It's so fucking hard to come up with an idea for a live show. It is so hard to come up with an idea of something that's going to work in like an hour and a half.
You got to onboard
with
the
some
whole
wiggle room if,
with,
like, if things go wrong and there's an audience and like there's all these different parts that are just like impossible to start putting down the groundwork for. And having the prompt of The Great Gatsby
or Moby Dick
is like, it's like, oh, okay, well, how can you turn Moby Dick into like a D&D thing? That's so actionable and so exciting and so fun to like figure out how those two things interweave. And so like, I genuinely don't look forward to going back to a season where I don't have this huge, like, creative pool to be able to.
I think Sherlock Holmes would be fun.
Holmes is big. Travis, like, I think the only request I got all season for, like, can you please put this guy, it was Sherlock Holmes yeah. in your sort of, like, conclusion. But I felt like Mutt had so much stuff that he had changed about the world fundamentally.
But not about him. Mutt was unchanged. There was no character.
Yes, no, absolutely. He was the rock in the middle of the Zen garden.
Yeah.
That is not interested in shifting around at all.
But, you know, there's a lot of detective fiction that could be parlayed into. I mean, like some Agatha Christie.
If we did do Sherlock Holmes, I would want to play a different game. I would want to play Sherlock Holmes Consulting Detective.
But, like, it's so weird to do. Like, we have played a game called Sherlock Holmes and a Vampire before. It's very wild if we were to do it. Like,
a different Sherlock Holmes game than our Sherlock Holmes and a Vampire game with Sherlock Holmes and a Vampire. Yeah, that's a good point.
Can I ask? May I ask one?
Sure. Sure.
From Theo. Theo is very complimentary about how we're not quite as bad at D&D players as we used to be.
Love all the compliments in these guys. It really hits home. Thank you.
Thank you, Theo.
Yeah.
But then Theo asks, and what is something in the world of TTRPGs that you are yet to explore and looking forward to in the future? I would like to lead off by saying we have really wanted to do like a big Heinlein-y space opera.
Yeah, sure.
You know, with,
we do kind of do that already.
Well, I know. Yeah, well,
with Hootie and the Nannies.
Hootie and a little bit with the Star Blaster.
That world is so much more. I mean, this is the thing about Hootie and the Nannies, though. And, like, some people may not even be, I don't know, if you don't listen to live ones, you haven't heard of Hootie and the Nannies. But, like,
you've never heard Hootie.
It's an original, like, the idea of, like, a space opry is, like, I like that vibe better than, that's a more fun space world than we're going to make if we set out to do, like, we want our Mass Effect, you know? But.
Yeah, sure.
I'm still very interested to see. We've always talked about trying to do a horror, and like, I don't know if we could pull it off. I legitimately don't know if we could make it.
I mean,
work.
Monster of the Week is very much a horror game.
Yeah, but like,
Monster of the Week. I mean, I wouldn't call Supernatural like a horror.
It's exciting, like, but you're not trying to. You're not trying to scare people, right? Like, I don't know that we've done one other than, I guess, like, no. I mean, I don't think we've done one trying to scare people. And I don't know that we could. Like, I don't know if we could. I don't know the context in which we could expose people to that. Like, we've talked about trying to do something live around Halloween, but it's like, that may be an absolute bomb, like, live on stage.
I still really want to play 10 Candles. Do you guys remember that one? Me telling you the premise of 10 candles. You have 10 candles, and it's sort of like your HP, and you have these cards about with your like traits on it that you burn with one of the candles in a little bowl. I don't know if we could do that in a live show, actually, because I don't think that most theaters will allow you to set flame to paper on stage.
No. Yeah.
Probably let you use electric candles.
That's not as cool.
I think, though, in general, another one of the things that I think worked in this season, as far as like stuff we haven't explored yet, is I think that sometimes you can get in your own way by trying to say, like, I want to do something I haven't done yet, something completely original, something that doesn't feel like I'm rehashing old stuff. And I think that that isn't necessarily always conducive to creativity.
Sure.
Where I think, like, for example, I think one could make a comparison between, like, Merle and Philo, both Men of the Cloth and blah, blah, blah. But they ended up being wildly different characters and, like, you know, making different choices than each other would make. And so I think that trying to get into a mindset of, like, well, I want to do something completely different than we've ever done before can block creativity sometimes.
Yeah. I also just want to say that I'm deeply interested in the entire sort of kids on bikes
ecosystem
of products.
Yeah, I'd really like to do one of those.
I don't know which of those myriad things we would want to do, but they have sort of a system for most genres, it seems. So, here's one from Helena, who says, and others, who asked, did you anticipate this campaign running as long as it did, or did you expect it to last longer? Definitely not the latter. This is part of a sort of initiative we've kind of taken after Ether-C to do shorter seasons, like Utra Space was at 4 or 5 episodes. We've been trying to, I guess, Steeplechase How long was Steeplechase? How many episodes? That was like 30-ish, right? That was about the same length as Dracula. Yeah, I think we've been trying to kind of like do shorter form stuff.
42.
42, wow. I think that we had a conversation after recording a few episodes of Taz versus Dracula where we were like, we should do a little, we should do more with this. We should try to, you know, see how far this thing goes.
If anything, I will say, as we were trying to plan for the next season, there was, I would say multiple times over a series of months where someone would say to Griffin, like, how many more episodes do you think this is going to go so we can plan with it? And Griffin's like, I don't know, man, maybe 8. And then it'll be like, no, maybe 10. Maybe 12 more.
Yeah, I think it was originally the date I said was, yeah, it'll wrap in April. And I think it just finished up in August. So I missed that by just a little bit. It's fucking hard to figure that shit out when you're doing it weekly. It's like really tough to kind of like, I don't know, adjust the scope of the thing with that kind of turnaround.
Hey, let's talk about what we're doing next, huh?
I would love to do that.
Yeah, what's going on?
We're going to be playing poker and then just kind of talk about the hands that we've done.
We are going to know. We got the silliness out of our system. It's time to get serious again. Hardcore.
Let's hear.
Rules. Lots of them. Pluses, minuses. You won't believe how many Ds.
When we sit in together to try and figure out what the next season is, I feel like we all kind of make hard sells for our ideas if we have any. And I think Travis, lead off.
So in doing this, I think it was Griffin who proposed the challenge of like, think about the thing that you would run that just makes complete and absolute sense that you would be the one doing it. Like that it just makes complete sense that you're doing it. And literally that night I was trying to fall asleep and I couldn't, and it just smashed into my brain. And the next day I got on a call with them and I was like, guys, one word, abnormals. And abnormals
just instant.
Like,
Yeah, of course.
Here we go.
Yeah.
Abnormals is the blanket term that I use. I've talked about on My Brother Me and McRoy Family Clubhouse numerous times of like those 90s and 2000s cartoons of like animal heroes with muscles in places they should not have muscles, these teams of guys. And so that's the concept. And then we were going through like rules, systems and everything, and nothing fit. So I developed my own kind of very simple, it's like 3.5 pages of rules for the game, and basically set up of like you have abs kind of skills. And
the two skills are abs and animals.
Yeah, abs skills and animal skills.
It's easy to keep track of, yeah.
Yeah, I don't think we need to break down. There's an episode zero that I think is probably going up.
But it's going to be swear free. So if you want to
no cussing in this season,
if cussing bothers you and you got people you want to listen to that don't like cussing, this won't have cussing in it.
Yeah, can we talk about that decision for a moment? Because that might seem out of left field for our program.
Yeah. So as we were planning the season, talking about it and talking about like the source material that it was inspired by, we started talking about like, oh, maybe it has like a Saturday morning cartoon vibe and blah blah blah, and then that led to what if it was something that people whose kids have started getting into Adventure Zone and role-playing games and this kind of thing could listen to without needing to turn the volume knob down real quick or say, but you're not allowed to say that at school. They can say it. It's okay for them to say that word, but you can't say that word.
Yeah, exactly.
And so,
who do you think's gonna have the toughest time with that between us four?
Oh, it's Griffin. Are you kidding me?
Yeah. You say that, dude. I pop him off without thinking quite a bit. Justin drops some heavy ones, some heavy doobies. I'm excited. I know that like Henry has an interest in Taz, but also like it's a foul program made by bad men who say raunchy stuff nonstop. So it'll be great, personally speaking, to have something that I can show him for that.
Killer. Well, I'm looking forward to doing it with you guys.
Is there anything else you wanted to say about abnormals?
Yeah. Do you guys want to say who your characters are?
Let's save it. There's a whole episode for that. It's fun. You're going to listen to it. It's good.
Oh, what about the music?
Yeah, without saying anything about it, the theme song is unlike anyone we've had before.
I didn't make this. I didn't fucking touch this.
Yeah, we can't reveal it because it's coming out pretty soon and it's going to be a whole thing. But it's maybe my favorite. I love it very much. It's just very fun. It's been stuck in my head for months.
Yeah, and thank you again to John Legend for. I mean,
Griffin. Shit.
But I do think it's important to say that we're another part of Abnormals is continuing this kind of footloose, fancy free, really enjoying the moment.
Yeah, it's a fun
and having fun with it. Yeah, thing. Within the no cussing structure.
Sure. Dad has not cussed so far. Dad is crushing the no cussing game. He's so freaking good at it.
Do you think that that it's not just no cussing, but content wise? I mean,
there's I will say that there is thought put towards it, but no promises.
Yeah, I like that trap.
I think in our character descriptions, we do describe them as sexy animals, which Abnormals are. I think as a rule, but if that's
right there,
that's
the name.
That's the baseline right there. So if that is unacceptable, maybe wait for, we'll do, Dad played a Smurf RPG when we were at Gen Con. Maybe we'll do an all Smurf season that'll be like totally TVY7 minimum.
So make sure you stick with us for that and so much more.
That is it for this breakdown of Taz versus Dracula. Genuinely, I just want to say again, I think it's the most fun I've had doing this show with you guys. And I really, really... really enjoyed kind of like focusing on goofs first with y'all. Because that is like always the most, that's always the most enjoyable that I think us working together is when we kind of.
And I'm sure during the break you heard all the announcements, but just real quick so it doesn't pass us by. We're going to be at Rose City Comic Con coming up pretty soon. So make sure you come out and see us there.
Yeah. Okay, everybody. Until next time. When we'll recap Taz Abnormals, do we want to give people like a sneak preview clip of
when the milk came out of Dad's character?
No, we're just going to end it, Griffin. No, absolutely not. We just talked about difficult concepts and having to explain them from children.
Let's just be honest, guys. We never came up with a way of ending the Adventure Zone that didn't give us hives. We just have no way.
I have a great idea.
good, bye-bye.
Bye.
Maximum Fun,
a worker-owned network
of artist-owned shows,
supported
directly
by you.